Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile and smart speaker. This is the James Gray Show with the Lords Taverners.
You're listening to a podcast edition of The James Gray Show. You can listen to me live every weekday from 1:30 p.m. on Love Sport Radio, on DAB Digital, online or on your Alexa smart speaker. And if you're listening to the podcast, do leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Love Sport.
Charlton need Lee Bowyer. And the good news for Charlton fans is that Lee has indeed signed a new contract. News that usually wouldn't be that remarkable, because obviously he guided the Addicts back to the Championship. Brilliant run at the end of last season. And of course that fabulous performance in the playoff final as well. But this contract actually represents a U-turn that Theresa May would be proud of, quite frankly. It, completely remarkable 24 hours for Charlton Athletic Football Club. Because yesterday, owner Roland de Châtelet released a statement, which didn't have an author's name in it, but it was pretty clear who it came from. And it said that he was basically advertising for a caretaker manager, because Bowyer, whose contract expires at the end of this month, was asking for too much money. Now, he's supposed to have turned down a contract which is more lucrative than any other Charlton manager ever, the statement read. Well, except for the Premier League era. So it's sort of one of it was a lot of money. That's what Roland de Châtelet was trying to say. He called other Championship owners crazy for paying the £1 million wages that other managers in the Championship earn. Well, today, by his own definition, he is one of the crazy owners, I should say, because he has offered Lee Bowyer, amazingly, in the space of less than 12 hours, because we understand that de Châtelet contacted Bowyer about 10 o'clock last night while he was on holiday, he offered him double what he had initially turned down. So de Châtelet offers him this contract, gets snubbed, mouths off about it on the club website, and all of a sudden offers him double the salary, just like that. I mean, where's the logic in that? You think the others are crazy, Roland? I think you might be the crazy one, quite frankly. And so we're back as we were. And all those Charlton fans whose blood pressure, frankly, has probably skyrocketed over the last 24 hours can at least start to calm down and get on the beta blockers, lads. Just chill out. See if we can maybe try and accept Roland de Châtelet's absolute madness for what it is. But actually, I still think they should be angry. If you were a player this summer, and your agent rang you up and said, oh, look, Charlton are interested. They're playing the Championship next year. Surely your reply would be, well, will they be interested tomorrow? Because if de Châtelet can hang his own manager out to dry in the way that he did, if he can put up a statement like that, which was so disparaging of Bowyer for asking for more money, for asking for a three-year deal, and for involving an agent, you know, all of which are quite normal and reasonable things to do in negotiations. If he can hang his manager out to dry for that, then what else could he be capable of? How can you think that that wouldn't be the case in reverse? If I were a player and I had literally any other offers available to me, I'd be pursuing those. Because, look, I personally love Charlton Football Club, but not enough to put a year of my career in serious jeopardy by working for one of the most unpredictable men in the Football League. What this also does, it puts into context what Lee Bowyer has achieved in the last 15 months since he took over as manager at Charlton. I mean, he has not only got a team that doesn't have the financial artillery to compete with the likes of Sunderland and Portsmouth, he's not only got them punching well above his weight, he's also managed to insulate the dressing room from the utter turmoil and madness going on over their heads. It would be very easy for them to get massively distracted and go, you know what, forget this, I'm going elsewhere. Whatever he's done, it's working, and he's managed to make them immune to it. And that's what Lee Bowyer has done every time. When he got linked with a QPR job, he went into the dressing room and he said, the only reason I'm getting linked with this is because you guys have done this brilliantly. Every single time, he's put it back onto the players, and that's as admirable as anything else. The Championship will be a massive challenge for Charlton next year. Absolutely enormous, but at least they've got the right man at the helm. Their man, their leader, and still their manager. Like a heavyweight world champion of the world, Lee Bowyer is still the manager of Charlton Athletic. and let's hope he lasts a long, long time.
Love Sport.
England had finished their innings against Afghanistan. Moeen Ali hit 31 off 9 balls at the end of the innings to help them to 397 for 6. Afghanistan trudging off. Looked like they've really taken a bit of a beating there. Moeen Ali, as I say, 31. But the star of the show, Owen Morgan, 148 off 71 balls, 4 fours and 17 sixes, a world record 17 sixes for the England captain, who couldn't even really sit down properly the other day because he had such bad back spasms, but he looks like he's back and fighting fit with 148 today. Johnny Bairstow also got 90. Joe Root got 88, and England just short of 400 against Afghanistan. From the bowling figures, by the way, Rashid Khan, 9 overs, no maidens, none for 110. This is a guy who's regarded as probably their best T20 bowler, taking some real tap. Owen Morgan especially really launched into him and had to feel a little bit sorry for Afghanistan, I'm afraid. Unusually for England, to be fair, they batted first, which usually they win the toss and bowl. That's their sort of preferred method. They've obviously smashed a huge total, so they've kind of justified that decision from the toss. Look, this Afghanistan team, even by what must have been low expectations, they've underperformed at this World Cup. With bat and ball, 4 games, 4 defeats, it looks like it's going to be a fifth. But England not in perfect shape either, by the way. Jason Roy, that hamstring injury, he's on pundit duty today. Liam Plunkett's got a dodgy tummy. Owen Morgan, as I mentioned, he's got back spasms. Joe Root was wearing some strapping on his back there as well. And he's obviously had back problems before. But we're not really expecting Afghanistan, even with England struggling a little bit. We're never really expecting Afghanistan to cause them many problems. Even as well, by the way, on a pitch that they called at the toss an Asian condition wicket. Now, Afghanistan shuffled the pack, they've made a few changes to their team, just trying to get something going. And it does help to demonstrate what a cricket team looks like when it emerges from a place like Afghanistan. But what does the England team look like? You know, with Jason Roy out injured, we obviously saw James Vince open the bat, he only got 26. And there has been talk of just moving Joe Root, who got 100 opening the batting against West Indies, of just moving Joe Root up to open. We spoke to Martin Bicknell on the James Gray show yesterday, and he talked about whether the Test captain could open the batting in the ODIs.
Amla's done it for South Africa for many years. They're similar types of players. I mean, I think what you see with Joe Root at the moment, he's very adaptable and he can bat in different positions and at different times of the inning. So I would have no hesitation in putting him the top of the order. You've seen it with Ian Bell. I mean, good stroke players, you know, are very successful in one-day cricket. I mean, I think you find that Sri Lanka went through much of their one-day success with people like Sangakkara and Jayawardena, who just didn't, there was no sort of massive hitting to it. They were just good shots. So I think England can still score quickly. And I think if you've got Joe Root back for 50 overs, you're going to find that you're going to be 300, 350 anyway. So I would have no problem with putting Root at the top of the order.
I think the problem with playing Root at the top of the order, when you consider how England have gone about their business in the last year, is that they've utilised that first power play in the 10 overs when you're only allowed 2 men out. Remember, you're allowed 4 out in the next 30 overs and then 5 out in the last 10. What England have done well is pick opening batsmen who are able to utilise that first power play. Roy and Bairstow are excellent at punching through the field. That's not really Root's game. You know, he hit a runnable 50 in this game without hitting more than 2 boundaries. He was 54 off 50 with just 2 boundaries, and that's his game. He's brilliant at finding singles off every single ball, of finding 2s in the outfield. That's what he does best. And yet, he doesn't need to open the batting to do that because you'd much rather have someone who can hit boundaries in that first 10. So let's not go away from how we've got here. We're a very good one-day side. Let's not move away from what we've done best thus far. Afghanistan, meanwhile, probably feel they do need to move away from what they've done thus far. But they're a remarkable cricket team, really, when you consider their background. You know, all of these guys have grown up in a war-torn country where conventional and organised cricket coaching just doesn't really exist. There's a few and far between in terms of coaches or summer camps or anything like that. It's completely foreign. Take, for example, Hazratullah Zazai, an unbelievably talented guy, actually dropped for this game because he's not been in great form. But he's often a firebrand at the top of that Afghanistan batting order. Frankly, he looks more like a baseball player than a cricket player when he stands at the crease. take Rashid Khan, a bad day at the office for him, but, you know, an expensive player in the IPL. And he has supposedly had a bowl with Adam Zampa, the Australian leg spinner. And he said, well, I tried to learn what Rash does, but there's no point because I literally can't do it. I literally cannot bowl what he bowls, even if I tried for 1,000 years. Take Mujibur Rahman. He opened the bowling for Afghanistan today. A spinner. He bowled leg spin and off spin out the front of his hand. Probably unlike anyone else in world cricket. You know, his uncle, Noor Ali Zadran, will open the batting for Afghanistan now. I can't imagine that's ever happened in international cricket. Uncle and nephew opening the bowling and batting respectively. So when you consider what most of these guys have been through, you know, they learn the game in refugee camps, in war zones. What they've actually achieved is pretty impressive. You know, a couple of great performances of the Asia Cup, and all right, England is probably their worst set of conditions in terms of trying to win games of cricket against top-level international sides. But they're only going to get better by being at the World Cup. You know, these teams benefit from the exposure and the funding that something like the World Cup brings, and not to mention the experience. And, you know, they can say, look, I can come and play for you in the Caribbean Premier League. Look what I did at the World Cup. Remember when I did this? Remember when I did that? We've seen it work for Bangladesh, and it can work for Afghanistan too. It would work for Ireland or Scotland or Kenya or Nepal, or which, by the way, is a massive emerging nation in cricket. If you were to have a 16-team, not a 10-team World Cup, and I know that there will be people who hold this Afghanistan side up and say they only won one game or they won no games, what's the point in having them? Even 10 teams is too many. I know there will be people who say that, but it's not the case. The only way these sides are able to develop and carry credence back to their home country, to campaign for more funding in their home country from governments, from NGOs, the only way is if they can say, yes, well, we went to the World Cup. Look how good this is for the country. Afghanistan won't win today. They might not win a game all tournament, but it's absolutely crucial that they continue to be given the chance to do so. If nothing else, take away the expansion of the game, the commercial side in the countries that they come from, and, you know, the idea that cricket is for everyone. Even without that, they provide brilliant colour, enthusiasm, a new vibrant fan base. The Afghanistan fans are absolutely amazing. And a group of cricketers whose unorthodox style we can actually learn a lot from. You know, watching Hasratullah Zazai, I'm sure there's things you can take away from it. Rashid Khan, Mujibur Rahman, all people who can teach other international cricketers something new and something different. So don't let the defeats put you off, because these guys are here to stay as long as the ICC let them.
Love Sport.
That Lee Bowyer has agreed a one-year contract extension with the club. Didn't think I'd be saying that after my show yesterday, when, frankly, things descended into chaos. Which, unfortunately, is not an uncommon thing to say about Charlton Football Club. But the upshot of it all is that he's staying. Lee Bowyer has a one-year rolling contract to take Charlton into the Championship next year, which is good news, it would seem, anyway. Let's speak to a former Charlton man. Bradley Pritchard's on the line now. Brad, I think when we rang you yesterday, you were pretty fuming about what Roland de Châtelet had said about Lee Bowyer. I suppose slightly less fuming today.
Hi, James. Yeah, well, firstly, I didn't even know about it, but your producer Ben told me, and I kind of wasn't prepared for the news. So then I had a look at the statement, and then you think it's not going to happen. It's, you know, this is another huge mistake. 24 hours later he signed. So yeah, I'm not sure. I thought my heart was going to at least settle down after the playoff final, but it looks like the off season is just throwing in a few more curveballs as well.
As someone, you know, obviously you played for Charlton, and I take it you're sort of still a Charlton fan of sorts. How hard is it to go through the roller coaster that is a Du Châtelet run club?
I genuinely couldn't believe it. You know, I don't know what the statement was yesterday. I don't know what they was trying to do. I'm thinking, what, maybe it was a bit of, you were trying to apply a bit of pressure, but I think it's a very dangerous game, you know, especially with such a high value asset as Lee Bowyer is right now. So I can't even pretend to to understand his thinking.
And also, you know, I mean, this is what I put sort of earlier, and I put it to you. If you were a player and you were looking for a Championship club this summer, and your agent rang you up and said, oh, Charlton are free, and you'd just seen that statement and you've seen what goes on at Charlton, surely you'd think, not sure I fancy being a part of that, actually.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It's definitely something that makes you think twice. I think the most important thing now is that Lee Boyer has given the backing financially. You know, you're talking about recruitment, and that's going to be massive, because you need to get your recruitment right. You know, the Championship is a different animal to League One, on and off the pitch, and that recruitment needs to be spot on. You know, you can only get that through time and everyone pushing in the same direction. And if you're a potential player, you're looking at it and you're thinking, well, I don't know if everyone's pushing in the right direction.
Well, fortunately, Lee is staying for at least another year. You obviously got promoted in the same, you know, same two divisions, from League One to the Championship back in 2012. What was the biggest difference from your perspective as a player between League One and the Championship?
Quality. And along with that is consistency. Mm. You know, you've got players there who perform at such high levels on a consistent basis. And this is, you know, things that all players have said and fans have heard before, but it is such a grueling league. You're playing Saturday, Tuesdays, and you need to be performing at the highest level consistently. And that's definitely one of the things that you see the top teams in the Championship. They do that, and they do it very well. And if you haven't got that within your team, you get found out pretty early.
What did you, on a personal note, as a player, was there anything you changed about your game as you stepped up? Were there things that you maybe could afford to do in League One that you all of a sudden found you couldn't do in the Championship?
Yeah, it is those the idea of inconsistency. You know, you found that you had to be on it every week, because maybe in League One you could maybe try and cover up with hard work, but in the Championship, it's all about quality. It's all about ball retention, being able to be clinical with the chances, because you're not going to get as many as you may do, you know, in League One. Mm. So that's another thing you notice is when the top boys get opportunities, they put them away.
In terms of Lee Boyer himself, you know, we talked about his contract and what he's had to go through with the owner. What have you made of him as a manager? He's obviously managed to somehow get this group of players really well galvanised and protected from everything that's gone with the owner. You know, have you seen much of that from the outside and heard what he's like as a manager as well?
Well, I mean, I'm in and around the training ground a lot, because I do work with the scholars, so he's 18. But you see the way he just interacts with the guys. And I talked to Johnny Jackson, who's an absolute real inspirational figure there, you know, and his role can't be underestimated. But it's all about the man management, being able to influence, I think, more than anything, and inspire the boys to work hard, to just keep going. You know, you look at the momentum he's actually built over them. I think it was probably since December or January, and it's just been incredible. So a lot of it is building on that momentum and knowing how to manage the boys, and he's done that fantastically.
And just finally, Bradley, what do you think Charlton's chances of staying up in the Championship next year are? Are you pretty optimistic?
As a fan, you know, you always have to be optimistic.
Yeah.
But you also, a lot of my belief is going to be down to the recruitment process.
Yeah.
That's going to be important. You know, we've lost a lot of players because they were on loan, and these are players who made a significant impact on the team. You're asking Lee Boyer, if you don't back him, you're asking him to try and pull a few rubbers out of the hat, you know, so to speak, and find another lot of loan players who can do the same. But I think it's so important that he needs to have that financial backing in the recruitment process. Based on that, I'll you know, come the start of the season, I'll be able to give you a better idea of whether I'm hopeful or not. But I think that's the same for all Charlton fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of hope around the Valley, always has been. Bradley, thank you so much for coming on. Bradley Pritchard there, former Charlton midfielder, a man who knows the club pretty well as well. Lee Bowyer, of course, this morning signed a one-year contract extension. We understand that Roland de Châtelet, after that statement on the Charlton website yesterday, rang Lee Bowyer at 10 o'clock last night and said, okay, well, how about double what I said last time? And Lee promptly went, oh, well, yeah, I suppose so.
Love sport.
Michel Platini one is ongoing. Anti-corruption police have arrested Michel Platini. They're going to question him about a lunch with the ex-French president Nicolas Sarkozy 10 days before the ballot was made for the 2022 World Cup. Of course, at present, that's going to be held in winter and in Qatar. Pretty unusual, you might say. Look, I don't know whether this is going to result in the World Cup being moved. You know, the 3 years' notice, while that might sound like a lot, for an event like the World Cup, it's not really very long. And actually, you might see that they go, well, sure, it was corruptly awarded. The investigation here is into private corruption, criminal conspiracy, and trading in influence and concealment of trading in influence. The meeting took place 10 days before the official ballot. You had Nicolas Sarkozy, Crown Prince of Qatar, Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. He's been the emir since 2013 now. And Platini was present as well. It was centred around, apparently, the Qatari acquisition of Paris Saint-Germain and a rise in shareholding in the Lagardère Group and the creation of a sports channel in exchange for a vote. This is all according to the Mail Online reporting this at Pleasant. Of course, Platini has previously... he knows these police well, and the authorities will be looking for more answers to the questions that they've got. Le Monde claimed that the police also want to speak to Sepp Blatter, despite having already questioned him as a witness back in April 2017. I'm sure they'll be looking for those two to corroborate their evidence. But will we move the World Cup? I don't know. But there's kind of an inevitability here of if they do move it, there's only a certain number of places they can go. Because you can't really ask a country to build lots of infrastructure on a short notice World Cup. You kind of need a country that's already got the stadiums, already got the infrastructure. The obvious choices are the US, England, maybe Japan. That's literally it. They're the only ones you probably could look at and say, unless you went back to Russia, you know, 3 years later, which I don't think would be very popular, they're the only places you could go, actually, maybe we will move away from Qatar because it wasn't the right way to do it. As it is, knowing FIFA, I don't think that'll happen. Quick update from the cricket. Jofra Archer's got the first breakthrough for England. Of course, Afghanistan are chasing 398 to win at Old Trafford. And Jofra Archer has just cleaned up Noor Ali, who had opened the batting. He had yet to get off the mark. And Archer, well, it's not a great shot, quite frankly. It was some width on offer, and it's a thick, thick inside edge onto his own stumps. The zing bales certainly went off there, and Archer has yet another wicket. He's obviously having an impressive first World Cup so far. England, by the way, 1,000-1 on to win this game. I'm not sure they will have got much shorter. Noor Ali Zadran gone for a duck. Dragged on. Very disappointing for him. Of course, his nephew opened the bowling for Afghanistan. I also want to talk about Paul Pogba a little bit, because if you're the ultimate cynic, and you believe that Paul Pogba's sole goal in life is to accumulate as much money as possible, then he's played an absolute blinder. He's done it absolutely brilliantly. No doubt about that. There have been a few reports blaming his agent, Mino Raiola, for sort of trying to hawk him around and always planning to move him more often than clubs would like and trying to make him a bit more money. A few reports like that. But frankly, even if that's true, Pogba is still his own man. And he must still take responsibility for his career. You know, you can have an agent, but you are still able to say no to them. You are still able to say, actually, I'd like my life to be like this. You know, they don't have to wipe your backside at every possible moment. You are still your own person, Paul. Or at least I hope you are. In this case, you know, Mino Raiola has done plenty of things. In this case, it looks like he's about to manoeuvre himself into either a world record wage or an extremely lucrative move away from Manchester United. And all he's had to do, if he gets that world record wage, the Mail reporting he might get offered £500,000 a week. All he had to do was say that he might leave. It was just to dangle the suspicion in Ed Woodward's head that he might head off and that he might be done with Manchester United. So he's going to hold them to ransom. That's, I mean, because he might move to one of his rivals. Actually, I say rivals. That's not accurate, because he's threatening to move to Real Madrid or Juventus. United cannot reasonably suggest that they are still rivals to Real Madrid and Juventus. Maybe commercially, they're kind of close to the likes of Madrid and Juve. But in terms of actual footballing ability, there's no way. They can't possibly, and they won't be for a long time. Real Madrid are as poor as they've been for a long, long time, and yet they're still nowhere near the levels of Manchester United have plumbed. So they're now being held to ransom by Paul Pogba, because all they've got now is commercial success. Ed Woodward's the only bloke in the entire club, it seems, who actually wants him to stay. The staff, we understand, were disappointed when they heard he was probably going to come back next season. According to one source, they have problem almost every day with Paul Pogba. They're different problems each day, it seems. Solskjaer and Phelan are said to have felt some sympathy for Jose Mourinho, who, of course, massively fell out with Paul Pogba. They kind of understood why and how it did keep happening. The players generally wanted him to stay, but also with the acknowledgement that he does disrupt the dressing room, and that apparently the majority of them would understand if he were got rid of. The fans are sick to the teeth of him. The ex-players and the pundits, I mean, I've spoken to a couple of ex-players who are just sick to the back teeth of talking about him. You know, and anyone who knows the tradition of Manchester United is desperate for him to go. We tried to find someone to come and talk to us and tell us how much they wanted Paul Pogba to stay. We couldn't find anyone. But the question really is, why is Ed Woodward bucking this trend? Why is he the only one who thinks Paul Pogba is worth £26 million a year and more? I'll tell you exactly why. Because without Pogba, Woodward has nothing to fall back on. His whole raison d'etre has been commercial success at United, and it's the stick with which he can beat the owners and say, yes, we've struggled on the pitch a bit, but look at the bottom line. Look at our balance. Look at our commercial revenues. They're up. It's all good. And Pogba's part of that. So if he gives up on Pogba now, what has he got left? Nothing. And frankly, Manchester United, we used to call them Merchandise United. Now, it's Commercial United, because nothing matters at that club. Football doesn't matter. All that matters is the bottom line. And frankly, when your main purpose is to play football, I think trading standards should be involved.
Love Sport.
And of course, I want to look ahead to that big game in Italy tonight. One reason that we didn't necessarily see some of the younger guys as part of the Nations League squad, where we might have expected to, the likes of Phil Foden and James Maddison, was that they have headed to Italy with the under-21s. Eddie Boothroyd's men, of course, to take on the European Championships. It is a slightly odd format where you've got these four groups, but only three groups of four, where only the winner will go through, and then the best placed second place team. Slightly unusual one, but it does mean that pretty much you have to be right on it from the off. It's also a condensed format because the first game was on the 16th, so on Sunday, and then the final, I think, is as late as something like the 30th of June. Yeah, it is. It's only a sort of two-week format. And, of course, there are three group games for every team, straight into then a semi-final and then a final. There may also be an Olympic playoff because of some complicated Olympic qualifying. Probably going to see Dean Henderson, actually, in goal as opposed to Angus Gunn. He, of course, at Sheffield United on loan from Manchester United. Similarly, the likes of Phil Foden probably won't start because the team the under-21s have got has more experience in other positions. It's more likely, actually, we get Hamza Chowdhury, who's impressed so much for Leicester this season, alongside Kieran Dowell, another one who's been out on loan at Sheffield United. And I think that's worth saying that there's a recognition there from Eddie Boothroyd that much as Phil Foden might be a really talented guy, he'd much rather actually see a team that he's worked with and had together for quite a long period of time. Just to fill you in from Ascot, by the way, Arizona has won the 3:05, 15-8 favourite, has come home in a time of 1 minute and 12 seconds to win the 3:05 at Royal Ascot. But to mention Phil Foden, he's probably going to start on the bench for England and 21s tonight, which is kind of crazy when you consider that he's made 26 first-team appearances for Man City in a domestic treble-winning season, and he's just 19. 7 goals, of course, that winner against Tottenham in a massive Premier League clash in April. He's been backed by Pep Guardiola as an important player for the next decade. Pat Nevin, a friend of Love Sport, he's compared him to Xavi and Iniesta. So he's obviously extremely highly rated, but credit to Eddie Boothroyd for saying, you know what, actually, that's not what we're really about here. You can't come into this camp, you know, with your big reputation, with Pep Guardiola saying how good you are, and just walk into the team. This is about guys who helped get us here, who've been part of the team for a long period of time. And I think we give them huge amounts of credit for that. Phil Foden hasn't always started in centre midfield for the under-21s, but Kieran Dowell's done it 14 times. All right, Phil Foden's an under-17 World Cup winner, but, you know, who cares? Eddie Boothroyd sticking by his team, and I like that a lot. He's also probably going to have Jake Clark-Salter. He was named as captain on Monday morning for the campaign. I've written here snubbed, but maybe it's a bit harsh, but he's chosen him over some of the bigger names, you know, like James Maddison, Dominic Solanke, guys with far more caps, Tammy Abraham, Damari Gray, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, all of whom have appeared much more for the under-21s, whereas Clark-Salter's only got 9 caps for this particular age group. But clearly thinks that he's got some leadership qualities. He's come through the Chelsea Academy. He's been on loan at Vitesse Arnhem. Another one who's got a World Cup to his name, the under-20 World Cup he won back in 2017. And I sort of hope he can follow in the likes of John Terry's footsteps. Is that the kind of player we think he can be? I don't see why not. He certainly might be there or thereabouts. And of course, come through at the same academy. And he says he used to watch John Terry growing up. And then after games, youth games for Chelsea, that is, he'd find Terry wandering over to give him advice, which I think must have been quite surreal indeed. I'd also like to see Aaron Wan-Bissaka in action tonight for the under-21s. He, of course, impressed in pre-season last summer and then broke into the first team spectacularly. He has been quite marvellous over the last 12 months. Johnny Burrow telling us earlier that he is, in fact, the best defensive fullback, or among the best defensive fullbacks in Europe. Not just in England, but in Europe. Very impressive indeed. And James Maddison as well. He'll probably start a right wing just ahead of Aaron Wan-Bissaka at right back. You know, I think he's going to be in quite some demand this summer. He can play a number of different positions. You know, when he was at Norwich, he played as a sort of box-to-box midfielder, a number 8 almost. When he moved to Leicester, Claude Puel turned him into a 10. I don't know what his best position is, quite frankly, whether it is maybe an inside forward. I've always seen him as that, perhaps. You know, someone who could play inside left, a little bit like Eden Hazard, I think. But I don't know, because Norwich fans tell me he's got such a great range of passing, he can play deeper in midfield. Either way, you'd almost expect England to go into this under-21s expecting to win. When you look at how much Premier League experience there is in this team, or at least Championship experience, Fikayo Tomori at centre-half with Jake Clark-Salter, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, as I mentioned, Ryan Sessegnon's probably going to start on the left, Mason Mount, Dom Solanke. These are all guys who've played football at a very high level. And going to the under-21 European Championships, this isn't about going and putting a good performance and spending some time together. This is about, and Peter Taylor said it on this station, a guy who's been under-21 boss twice. He said, these under-21 tournaments, we didn't always get the best squads. Clubs didn't want their players to go away. We do now, and we should get used to going away and being successful. That's what England of the future need.
Love Sport.
Something we've been talking about all day here on Love Sport Radio is Lee Bowyer's new contract as Charlton manager. But it's not quite as straightforward as that. Let's ask Nathan Muller how he's been feeling over the last 24 hours. He's part of the Charlton Live podcast. I imagine if I'd spoken to you yesterday afternoon, Nathan, we might not have been able to broadcast it because there might have been a few F words and C words.
Put it lightly, yeah. just to put it lightly, I mean, it's just, to be honest, nothing seems to surprise us anymore with Roland. I mean, there was an inkling that it wasn't dead in the water per se, but I mean, you looked at the statement he put out, which was pretty savage, to be honest. Yesterday it would have been a bit of a different talking point, shall we say, but at least, you know, it's gone over the line now. But I mean, there's still a long way to go until there's, let's say, harmony down in South East London.
Look, we know that no one likes Roland de Châtelet, and, you know, it's sort of become old hat that we want him to go. But are you worried about what treating a manager like that might say to, for example, potential signings this summer?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course it is. I mean, at the end of the day, everyone knows an amazing job that Bowes has done. and you know, just the, what he's done since, not even last season, the season before, what he's, you know, what he's brought to the club. And I mean, let's put it straight. I mean, what, Lampard's on 2 million at Derby. Bowyer was asking for nowhere near that, I would imagine. So, listen, it's going to be, you'd hope it's not going to be off-putting, but as Lyle Taylor's come out and said when he joined Charlton, you know, Bowyer was one of the biggest factors of him coming down to Charlton, not going to Sunderland. Another one would be Josh Cullen when we got him from West Ham. And Lee Bowyer has the pull of the experience he had as a player and improving players like Joe Rebo, Christian Bielik, and players like that. So it's a good thing that he's obviously staying now, because hopefully we've obviously signed Macaulay Bonn from Leyton Orient recently. So hopefully it's the sign, you know, Roland's managed to get him tied down now, which he always wanted to stay. He always said he wanted to stay. But Roland doesn't have a football brain, unfortunately. He just thinks as it in too much of a business sense. And luckily, like I said, luckily we've done it now and we can get some signings over the line that are in the pipeline.
What do you think, in terms of areas of the side, what do you think are the most important areas to bring people in?
Well, I mean, we've not really got many players now. I mean, you look at, obviously, Christian Billick's gone back to Arsenal. Josh Cullen's gone back to West Ham. We've just signed Macaulay Bonn, Joe Rebo and Patrick Bauer, you know, two key players from last year who are rumoured to be going on free transfers, which is very disappointing. But like I said earlier, nothing seems to surprise us. So we're still looking, I think, in that midfield area, very light. We've only, you know, we've only got two strikers. So we still need a good sprinkling. I think of about 5 or 6 players, which we're going to be able to have to use the loan market. But that won't really happen until the end, towards the start of the season, when sides obviously submit their squads, especially for the Premier League.
I wondered whether, I mean, I said this to our Football Fan Show host here and the lads from the SC7 podcast. I said to them, maybe Charlton would be better off not going up this year and keep building in League One and try and build a solid platform. Was there any feeling of that with you?
I mean, I can understand where people come from and say that, but at the end of the day, you don't know what situation we was going to be in this season. So if we didn't go up, you look at the likes of, you know, Patrick Bauer, Joe Arriba, who might be going anyway. Lyle Taylor would have had offers from Championship clubs. So we would have built something last year like we have, but the squad would have been decimated again, because as soon as an offer or come in for a Lyle who would have went for big money, Roland would have taken it. So we probably said, in hindsight, yeah, we could have built on it, but we would have been back at square one again and Bowyer would have had to rebuild. So I think us going up at least has given us a bit of an extra platform to go on. But if we didn't go up, I think the squad would have been decimated. So I think we probably wouldn't have been in a better situation for sure.
Obviously, a lot's going to depend on, as you mentioned, how this summer goes and what it looks like. Yeah. But how optimistic are you that Charlton will stay up next year?
I mean, to be fair, you know, we're optimistic down there, but we're also realistic as well. We're not going to think we're going to be, you know, pushing for playoffs, that's for sure. Roland's already come out in another statement that he pulled out the other week saying that we're going to have one of the lowest budgets. And, you know, that's what Steve Gallen, Bowyer and Jacko have got to work with. And so with him coming out and saying that, unless a miracle happens and we get taken over, it looks like we're going to be down there or thereabouts unless Bowyer can pull off a miracle. But the thing is, last season, is which proved to be in the semi-final, the playoffs, and even the final, that we don't stop going. We had a great team spirit and a never die attitude. So anything can happen. But yeah, we're realistic. I think if we stay up, it'll be amazing. But we know it's going to be tough, and we're riding the crest of the wave at the moment, but it's definitely going to be difficult in a very strong Championship.
In terms of Charlton as a whole, I was down on Football for a Five a Day. Unfortunately, a 0-0 draw with Blackpool as it happened, but it was great to have, you know, pretty much a full stadium. And there was kind of mixed reviews of that day. I had a lot of fans saying, well, you know, these people won't come back, they're just plastics. Have you seen an increase in number of fans coming down and watching Charlton as Lee Bowyer's side have played better and better?
Yeah, I think not only that we're playing better and better, I think they're seeing a side that give them 120% every single week, and Bowyer's got us playing some nice stuff. They work hard, and yeah, you're always going to have fans that will come up when we're playing well, but I honestly think as soon as Roland goes, I think you have a good few thousand that will come back, and I know people will just say, oh, you're just saying that, but honestly, I honestly believe that. So you're always going to have an element of some fans who may just jump on the bandwagon. But listen, we all want Charlton to do well. And when a team's just giving you 100% every game, which is all we ask for. If we lose a game, but we've given everything, we lost at home to Peterborough, which we shouldn't have done, then the lads got to stand an ovation off. And obviously, when you're given 100%, you can't ask much more as a fan. And that's what Bowyer's instilled. And I mean, if I was a player and I weren't pulling, given 100%, I'm pretty sure Bowie would let me know. And I really wouldn't want that in a dressing room, to be honest.
No, I think being on the end of a Lee Bowyer rollicking is a bit much, really. Nathan, thank you so much for coming on. I'm glad it's been good news today rather than bad news yesterday. Nathan Muller there from the Charlton Live podcast. Called Lee Bowyer signed a one-year contract this morning at Charlton. Yesterday, didn't look like he'd be signing absolutely anything at that football club.
This is Love Sport.
You've been listening to a podcast edition of The James Gray Show. Remember to leave us a rating and a review, but only nice ones. I don't take criticism well.